So, we are on chapter 8 of Ecclesiastes. And we stopped in the middle. Last time we were discussing wisdom, how to live under, as I call it, a wicked ruler, or a minimum of capricious or impulsive leader. Someone who has power, who does as they wish. And we were discussing the actions of how to benefit yourself to wisely live under someone like that. We made note that the best thing to do was to keep the commandments of the authorities. And we were listing why that behavior was advisable for, you know, the oaths made that perhaps were made to God to your own self preservation. You wouldn't receive any harm by keeping the commandments. You know, also make mention of the impulsive nature of the ruler. He can do whatever he wishes. He has ultimate authority. And we ended at verse 7. And then we also discussed that all rulers are appointed by God. So to rebel against rulers is to rebel against the authority of God as well. And in verse 7 through 10, we're going to look at the fact that, you know, yes, this ruler has great power while on earth. The authority has been given to him. But as he is a man, as all men, eventually that rule shall end. So it's something you may have to live with it all your life if he lives longer than you. But if he doesn't, then you'll be free of it. Beginning Ecclesiastes 8 and 7. Alright, I'll begin in 6. Because for every matter there's a time and a judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly. For he does not know what will happen, so who can tell him when it will occur? No one has power over the spirit to retain the spirit, and no one has power in the day of death. There is no release from that war, and wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. All this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. Then I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This is also vanity. And you see here, I believe this is still talking about the ruler, as we've just read in the previous verses. We're talking about in verse 4, you know, where the word of the king is, there is power, you know. Who may say to him, what are you doing? In verse 3, it says he does whatever he pleases. And we see so that he has this power, he exerts this power as he so chooses. And here we begin to talk about death. And we again see this power that there's no trusting this power, you know, no trusting in the power you have to prevent you from death. The power is not going to prevent death. It's, he has no power over the spirit to retain his spirit, to maintain his life. So I think it's still talking about the king and his actions. Of course, that applies to everybody, but not all of us have power. And we see here it also uses an analogy as of a war with death. And in this war, there's no release, there's no discharge, there's no exemptions from this war. Death is the conclusion of it. If you turn to just Deuteronomy chapter 20, it just makes a brief mention of the system of release they had. Deuteronomy 20, beginning verse 1 through 8. Yeah. Mine actually has it labeled as the principles for governing warfare. We see here it says, you know, these are commandments to the nation of Israel. Is when you go out to battle against your enemies and see horses and chariots and people more numerous than you, do not be afraid of them, for the Lord God is with you, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. So it shall be when you are on the verge of battle that the priest shall approach and speak to the people. And he shall say to them, Hear, O Israel, today you are on the verge of battle with your enemies. Do not let your heart be faint, nor be afraid. Do not tremble or be terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is with you, goes with you, to fight for you against your enemies. to save you. Then the officers shall speak to the people, saying, What man is there who has built a new house and has not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in battle, and another man dedicate it. Also, what man is there who has planted a vineyard and has not eaten of it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in a battle, and another man eat of it. And what man is there who is betrothed to a woman and has not married her? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in a battle, and another man marry her. Then the officers shall speak further to the people and say, What man is there who is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return to his house, lest the heart of his brethren faint like his heart. And so these rules govern the nation of Israel in battle, that there were exemptions for some people from acts of war, for, you know, betrothal, for, you know, all these mentioned here. And if your heart was faint, you were released versus affecting those around you who were going to go into battle. And also in Psalms 89:48. Simple known fact. In 89:48, what man can live and not see death? Can he deliver his life from the power of the grave? And so, yeah, no man can escape death. There is no release. You know, in war, we have discharges, we have releases, procedures for when, you can get out of this. There's an exemption in these cases. You can get by. Is there any loopholes for death? Any bypasses? No. You're fine, let me know. No, there's not. only Elisha got to go to heaven without death. And he was... That's what's up. That was God's choice. The rest of us all have to face death unless God comes back before our deaths. So, no applies to all rulers. They have power on earth. No power is great. No one can question it. He must face death as well. And then it continues in verse 8, and it says, Wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. I think this is part of what's showing that this is a wicked ruler. We're talking about someone who has power, who thinks their power can save them, showing it doesn't. And also, your wickedness won't save you from it either. Maybe this is a wicked ruler, maybe it's not. It just depends how you read the verses. I think it is. But certainly, those who are given to wickedness aren't going to be saved by their wickedness from death. No man is. It affects all. And continuing in verse 9, one thing that Solomon, the preacher, has learned through study is that sometimes those who rule to their own hurt. They rule others and it hurts themselves. I know in the American Standard, it reads a little different. I know mine says, There's a time which one man rules over another to his own hurt. Identifying it as the one who is ruling is the one who's hurting himself, receives the hurt, he's hurting himself. And the New American Standard, I think it reads slightly different.
So man is exercising authority over one man to his hurt. That's
what to his hurt. Saying. So I guess you can read it the same way, but I think some people also can read it slightly differently. It says it rules over to his hurt, like as if it to the hurt of the one ruled. I think the context fits more to the his own hurt. Of course, that's what my translation says. I like my translation.
What do you use?
New King James. I'm just, for most of my study, I have several, I guess. Anyway, and we continue on in verse 10. Though this man is ruled... Though it's been difficult for those who are living, for the ones ruled under him, to see that the wicked are buried, they come and go from the place of holiness, and they are forgotten. So these difficult times, however hard they are, like most difficult things, like pretty much anything, we forget. It passes on from our minds. When it's here, when we're faced with it, when it's present before us. Yeah, it consumes our thoughts. And when it's gone, it doesn't. And it's forgotten. Just as you read in John 16, verse 21. the difficulties of child labor. 16:21. A woman, when she is in labor, has sorrow because her hour has come. But as soon as she has given birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish for the joy that a human being has been born into this world. And also in Exodus 16:3, these are just a couple of examples. I know there's many, and it's something we see, you know, continuing day to day in our own lives. Forgetfulness. 16:3 of Exodus. And the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." And of course, these are the nation of Israel in the wilderness, complaining to Moses, to Aaron, "Oh, we're going to die out here. Everything was so much better back in Egypt. No, it was great. Now things are awful." And of course, you know, you go back a few chapters being in Exodus, and that's all they were doing was complaining, crying out to the Lord in their anguish for the burdens that were placed on them, for the hardship and the oppression that they were suffering under the Egyptians. I guess they might not have been hungry, but they had plenty of other hardships. Now when they're hungry, they forget all of that. And so that's I guess the nature of man, to forget those things we dislike, but all things will end. And I wanted to go and look at verse 10 in a little more detail. I think maybe this is one of the verses I see, to me, that shows more solidly shows that this ruler is wicked. We've already seen this ruler, he rules to his own hurt. I think, as it shows, it's telling about how he can't save himself by his own power from death, nor will his wickedness deliver him from it. I think 10, the way I read it, it's talking about, we're still in the same context, but talking about the ruler. Right after it mentions he rules to his own hurt, he says, "And the wicked was buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and then he was forgotten." I see that, where he had come and gone from the place of holiness, I see that as you could read it as, oh, he'd come and go from, like, say, the temple, from place of worship, a place of holiness, and even though this person was wicked, so perhaps he was just feigning religion for outward appearances. But to me, it fits more the context of the ruler, as the place of holiness is as the place of rule. We know, we read in Romans 13, that God appoints the rulers, to be ministers over us. He appoints them to authority. And you see that place of holiness, to me, brings about, when you read in the Old Testament, how God had chosen the anointed, the kings of Israel. Saul was the anointed of Israel, and so was David. And that holiness, anointed, is all sort of the chosen. You're chosen to be separate and apart. You're appointed, and you're special. You're holy, in a sense. Maybe you may or may not agree with me. I had a few verses we could look at quickly. In 1 Chronicles 16:22. Here's that song of thanksgiving of David, and he's talking about the nation of Israel, saying, "Do not touch my anointed ones, and do my prophets no harm." And here we see the anointed ones as, the select, the chosen. Talking about the nation of Israel as the holy ones. As we know, Israel was. They were selected to be a holy, chosen nation. We also turn to 1 Samuel 24. We see this pointed out of Saul. Of course, we know he was anointed. He was anointed physically with oil. But 24, verse 6 and verse 10. And he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." And of course, this is David saying, "I'm not going to lay my hand against Saul. He is the anointed of the Lord. He is the chosen one, and he's special, and in some sense he's holy." 10, "Look this day, your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my eye spared you, and I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. And also when we turn to 2 Samuel chapter 1. You know, eventually Saul did die. 2 Samuel 1 verse 14. He was struck down by some of their own men. So David said to him, the one who had struck Saul down, how was it that you were not afraid to put forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? And verse 16, so David said to him, your blood is on your own head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, I have killed the Lord's anointed. And also 2 Samuel 19:21. Of course, this moves on to David. It says, but Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed in the day when David was fleeing during the rebellion of Absalom. This one cursed the Lord's anointed, and they were saying he should be put to death. And I think eventually he was put to death by Solomon. Maybe I'm missing it, maybe I'm wrong, but I think when you read this place of holiness, to me it doesn't fit that here's a wicked person trying to fit in with being religious, being holy. I think it's more of, this is the wicked ruler who's come and gone from the chosen place of authority. You know, he came, he ruled, and now he's gone. He's dead and he's buried. That's kind of how I got there. Does anyone have any comments on that? I'm sure someone may disagree. That's fine.
Well, I guess in 1 Samuel, when you were talking about David and Saul, you know, you can have respect for somebody in the position, but still not like them as a person and what they do. Yeah. And I think that those who go in and out from the holy place could be that respected position, and then, you know, go in and out from it, meaning somebody might go into that position being respected because they're in it, but then once they die, you know, they're out of it. But then, you know, you still hold a respect for that holy place.
Yeah, that's the same. The position of authority is to be respected. And regardless of whether this ruler was wicked, we look at the description of him. We see he was powerful, he was impulsive, he can do whatever he wants. You know, these words of wisdom are applicable whether the ruler is wicked or not. You know, regardless of what, you know, the wickedness of the ruler, all rulers are in the position of authority, and these actions we defined earlier, you know, to be obedient, to, you know, to not leave his presence hastily, not, you know, to show respect and not show impertinence and disrespect, those are, of course, are applicable regardless. And so they're actions we can use and apply in our lives to any person in authority over us. And it's not a never guarantee that you'll be better off, but it certainly increases your chances of being better off. You know, we know something that you can do this is wise, and you might be better off, you might not, but why not do it for the you know, the chances, the probability that you will be better off. You know, if you don't obey your authorities, if you show them disrespect, you're most certainly to feel the consequences of that. I'm very quiet today.
Actually, 2 Kings 19. Yes, he was threatened by Sennacherib, king of Assyria, very boastful, very arrogant, warning them, don't be dismayed, I'm so powerful that all the nations I'm conquered. Of course, God told Hezekiah not to be afraid of him, but then you see in verse 37, it came about as he was worshiping in the house of Mishrosh, his god, that Adrammelech and Shaarezer killed him with the sword. Here's a fellow that went to his holy place, that did keep him from dying.
Yeah.
And So this whole section, chapter 8, holds up about the utility of life. So here you're under this wicked ruler. He can go to his holy place. There's no option.
Yeah.
His holy place worship is God. He's not going to escape the inevitability of the fact he's going to die.
That's correct.
If I live under an awareness of that, make that mistake. I do want to make a side comment, but I think it's excellent that you mentioned it compared to the versions. Sometimes that really helps the words do things. And I know in your last class you were talking about where this section divides. And like in the New American Standard, it's got a bold number 5 and bold number 10 indicating paragraph division. But if you look at King James, it makes verse 6 through 11 paragraph. The American Standard makes verse 9 through 13 paragraph. New King James makes verse 10 through 13 paragraph. The NIV, I think, makes a new paragraph in verse 7 and a new paragraph in verse 9. Which is correct. Well, you have to decide the reader.
Yeah.
The point is that alerts you to that.
Exactly.
And I think that's what you reference to that. You can study it, and that'll be helpful.
That's correct. I went through a lot of material, and I noticed exactly what Ms. Pond was saying. I couldn't find hardly anybody that agrees on the breakups of the thoughts of this chapter. Everything I looked at was different. And I probably came up with something different myself. I don't know, but... the thoughts, a lot of the thoughts here in this chapter are throughout the chapter, but we like to, or I do, but a lot, most people do, I mean, we like to define things and categorize things and put them in logical order, and sometimes that's very difficult. And we look at, just the animal kingdom and how we want to break everything up into certain distinct classes. And then God has an animal out there that fits in 4. And the platypus or something like that. And so, not everything can be defined the way we would prefer it. So we see a thought that the thought pattern that flows through all of these verses is this ruler and how to live under him to our own benefit. And of course, we know that all men will die. There's no escaping that. And we're going to certainly getting more into that in chapter 9, the inevitability of death. So yeah, this wicked holy place of holiness, it could be, as I believe, this is the authority. It's certainly applicable that it could be, yeah, this person, he's wicked, and he still goes to his place of holiness. It's not going to save you. You will die. And we move into this, the next section discusses exactly that. That we cannot prolong our lives. We cannot prolong our lives by being just, by being righteous, and we cannot prolong our lives by being wicked. The ability, the power to prolong our lives is not a power given to us, regardless of what we choose. Beginning in verse 11, actually I have this whole section is 11 through 15, but we see in 11 through 13, we see that the wicked appear to prosper, or the appearance of that. And beginning in verse 11, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. And we stop there, and we see this, the wicked in some cases appear to prosper also in verse 14. But in verse 11, what do we see encourages men to behave wickedly, to continue in their wickedness? Why do men do that?
When I'm held accountable for what they've done.
Sorry?
When they didn't get caught, or slow punishment.
Yeah, sorry. Slow punishment. They appear to get away with it for the time being. Their judgment, their punishment isn't executed quickly. And that leads men to, I can get away with it. For at least for the moment, at their present state, I got away with it. I guess I'll keep on doing it.
As you were making comments earlier, it just reminded me of a thought in the book about being foolish, and it's men not listening to God's wisdom causes them to think the very things you're talking about. And Neil, I was thinking about death. You know, people come up with reincarnation that will be, you know, all these different things about death. And nothing's changed but to die. Yeah. And they can't explain, you know, that reincarnation and some of these other things they come up with. That's men's, you know, quote wisdom versus God, what God says. And not listening to it's foolish. And that's where you get this.
Kind of yeah. And of course, it's only when you see this punishment is that it's not that they don't receive punishment, it's just that at the moment they haven't got it. They did something the next day. I'm still here. I got away with it. I guess I can do it again tomorrow. You know, and it's just a matter of time, you know, that I think you see that in the economy, in the stock market. Before the bubbles pop, everyone's making tons of money. And at this point in time, everything rocks. Oh, wow, yeah. I'm smart. I'm doing good. And then you look 6 months after, say, the bubble pop, those same people, not doing so good. It's, you know, it's just a matter of where you are when things occur. Also, I wanted to point out, you know, this same thought continues back from, you know, from the ruler. If, you know, the wicked ruler, he goes about exercising his authority as he wishes, and no one stops him, nothing happens to him, and so he continues on. So we see, or he doesn't execute that judgment on people, and so things continue as they were, people continue in their wickedness. I also wanted to look at Psalms. There's some comments in Psalms that fit right along with this same thought. In Psalms chapter 10. And just sort of paraphrasing what the wicked are thinking as they're performing their actions. You see in verse 6, it says, "He said in his heart, I should not be moved, and I should never be in adversity. And it's talking about, you know, why should I go to God? I'm not going to be in adversity. In verse 11, he said in his heart, God has forgotten. He hides his face. He will never see. He's not seeing what I'm doing. You know, he's not paying attention. And in verse 13, why do the wicked renounce God? Because he has said in his heart, you will not require an account. I think that, you know, that this, as I said, foolishness to believe I did it yesterday, I got away with it today. God doesn't care. I can get away with it. He's not going to require account. He's not watching. And so they continue on and increase their wickedness. Of course, we know that's not the case. Judgment will come, but it's the fact that men don't perceive instant, you know, immediate punishment, that they feel like they've gotten away with it and they continue. And as we move on and in verse 12, we see, why does it appear that the life of the wicked, why does it appear that the evil life is prolonged? Why do those who pursue wickedness, why does it seem like their lives are prolonged? They receive this benefit. How is that apparent? How do we come to that conclusion?
Because sometimes they prosper very well despite the wickedness.
Yeah.
And you wonder what, you know, it's, well, why?
We see that in today, don't we?
Right.
You know, people made off. Got away with it for, I don't know how long, 10 years of scamming people, or maybe longer, I don't know. We see in verse 12, it says, though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged. So we see someone extreme in their evil. This person is abundantly evil. They continue and continue in what they're doing. They're doing sinful things 100 times in a day, and yet they continue on. They don't suffer the punishment, they don't receive judgment immediately, and so they continue on in their wickedness. It appears like their days are prolonged. Wow, you know, we... Do I have that in here? Oh, yeah, I do have it. Second later. Yeah,
but really, if that's a true fact. I mean, then, but if you're looking, thinking about how you look in the book, under the sun, that's true. They can't get away from the fact that wickedness is going to continue. Men are going to be treated unjustly. You know, the wicked will prosper because of their unjust ways. That's just the way it's going to happen. That's if you, you know, you keep it in context.
Yeah, well, yeah, all this is under the sun.
Right.
Of course, not dealing with the ultimate judgment of man after death. But we see, I guess I'll skip ahead. I mean, usually what is our expectation of what people should, you know, their judgment? What do we believe the wicked should get? What do we believe the righteous should have? What is our expectation?
Sorry? Punishment and reward.
Yeah, punishment and reward. And in a and I guess what is their punishment? What do we expect as their punishment or reward? So we're talking about under the sun. How is we're not talking about, you know, heaven and hell. So what is their punishment here?
We'd like to see the wicked be poor and suffering and hurting, and the righteous people living well and comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
In their mind, what we think should happen.
That's exactly the way we think. We think when the wicked suffer, they in prison or they're locked up. They don't get any good in life. They don't get any enjoyment because they were bad. Their lives should be shortened, you know, as their judgment is executed upon them. While the righteous, they're good. You know, they've done right. They've listened to God. They're functioning in society. Their lives should be prolonged. They should have enjoyment. They should have happiness. They should have all the things, you know, that we want because they were good. So they deserve it. The wicked, they don't deserve it. So they shouldn't get it. And of course, you know, is that expectation accurate? No, it's not. We just said it's not how things occur here in life, how things go under the sun.
Michael?
Yes?
There was a time when it was like that, at the beginning. When man didn't listen to God's wisdom, that changed the whole thing. But it's again, you just point back to men's ways versus God's ways, which is always right. And you get to this point.
Yeah. And I was going to get back to verse 8 when we were talking about here. You know, we see the wickedness. We see that the appearance that the days are prolonged. We know in verse 8 when we looked at it, the wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. It's not going to deliver you. It's not going to continue as it is, where you think, I'm going to get away with it day to day. You're not delivered because of that wickedness. Whatever God has planned, He's given people a certain amount of time, but their wickedness is not prolonged their days are not prolonged because of their wickedness. It's just whatever God has said is set. We see that also in verse 13. It says, it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow. And I think it's not talking about God who's going to prolong his days. God's not going to prolong his days. It's a matter of the wicked man would not prolong his days because of his wickedness, because he doesn't fear the Lord. He's not going to prolong his days because of what he's doing, because of his lack of fear. It's gonna end as God has said it. So it's not gonna be well for the wicked because they don't fear God. The days aren't prolonged because of their wickedness. And the preacher's recommendation to receive well-being is what?
Fear God openly.
Yeah, fear God openly. How would you interpret that? Is it to fear God openly?
Be righteous in all that you do.
Yes.
Sincerity.
Sincerity is going to show itself, right? In actions and behavior in your life. You know, it's not, I fear God, but I'm not going to make myself stick out in front of all the wicked people. It's, you know, if you're fearing God, you are going to, it's going to demonstrate itself in your life. And people are going to be able to see that fear of God in your life. It's going to be open. And so, we know all of this is vanity. 13. All is vanity for long life. And verse 14 through 15, it continues. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens, according to the works of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said this also is vanity. So I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better than to eat, drink, and be merry. For this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun. And we've already jumped into some of this. We discussed what man's expectation is. It's that the just live long, they get good life, and the wicked are going to get short lives, they're going to suffer from it. And we know that's not accurate just based on what we've seen in our own lives, based on what we read previously in Ecclesiastes. And also what it says here in verse 14. What does it say here in verse 14?
Evil happens to the just and the unjust. It's just, you can't play one's eyes and not both. Regardless, you can't change that back. come on good.
I think this is talking about the we've established the expectation is the just should live long and be happy. The unjust shouldn't. And what does it say in verse 14? Is that what we see in verse 14?
Live long lives, and righteous can live short lives.
Yeah. It doesn't make any difference. We don't see our expectations realized. Here we you know, like I said, we have the expectation that the just will live long, we'll enjoy them. And it doesn't happen. The wicked get what's coming to the just, and the just get what we believe should happen to the wicked. It's all mixed up. And so there is, you know, we don't see that realization of our expectations. And so what do we do despite of this? Do we just give up? I'm going to just do whatever I feel like. You know, be wicked or be righteous, it doesn't matter. What's the preacher's recommendation to do with this, of this vanity?
Enjoy what we have.
Yeah, we enjoy what we have. We can't control, we can't prolong our lives by our actions, whether they're righteous or they're wicked. God has set a time, that time is to be carried out, and it's regardless of how we behave, or I don't want to say that, but we can't, if God has set our time this is the extent of your life, by being righteous is not going to, may not prolong it, being wicked is not going to prolong it. It's set. And so, what do we have with the time we have given? It may be shorter than the guy beside me who is exceedingly wicked and you know, he may get to live longer than me. What do I do? Do I worry about him? This isn't fair. Allow bitterness and resentment to ruin what time I do have? No, we gotta enjoy what we have. Enjoy the life we have. There's nothing better to eat, drink, and be merry. We see, you know, given that, you know, just as we're living under this wicked ruler, we don't allow the bitterness of the situation to destroy our own happiness. We're living under a wicked ruler. The wicked appear to prosper and get more. Well, we need to continue and focus on ourselves. What time we have, we need to enjoy. There's no guarantee of long life. No matter what you do, you can't guarantee it. So you get what you get. Enjoy the time God has given to you. And we move into verse 16 through 17. We look at God's judgments. And Solomon says, "When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it." And so, you know, we've looked at all this situation, we've seen how we live our lives, and we see how to live our lives to our own benefit, we need to enjoy life, and still we do focus sometimes on why is it like that? This kind of purpose of the book is look at why is it like that? And we want to know why. Why do the wicked get to rule, or these rulers? Why do the wicked not get judged immediately? You know, I'm certain everyone's asked that question before. Why do they sometimes get to live longer? You know, we see good young men die early, and then Deanna pointed out, people who are in all sorts of immorality and sexual immorality, they live to old ages. Why is that? Do we get to know the answer? Has Solomon found the answer for us here? No, he hasn't. He hasn't found the answer. I'm going to go with all the head nodding his nose. No, he hasn't found the answer. Yeah, you know, this knowledge isn't given for man to know.
Well, you know, to be honest, I think it would be better to be righteous and die early than to live long and be wicked, because what would be the point of living on earth if you can be with God in heaven?
That's exactly true. And we all know that as Christians, as reading, you know, the New Testament, the inspired word given to us, we know that we live good lives, even if it means short lives, to the benefit that we'll have, you know, heaven.
Right.
But here we're talking about, you know, we're ignoring that for the moment, and the context is purely under the sun. We're under the sun, we're not looking at that. And so here under the sun, this is a situation we're faced with. Now we got to live here and get through this. You're right. I'm not saying you're not. You're
right.
Exactly right. And we all know you're right. But for the moment, we're not focusing on that particular aspect. We're focusing just on under the sun and how we're getting through it and what we have to face and what we see when we're here. And we see the even though man labors to find this answer, everyone asks these questions and people try to seek to find the answers of why, we don't get to know. We see even if a man gives up his sleep, he doesn't sleep any. Day or night, he focuses on answering these questions. He's not going to learn it. He's not going to get the answer. The wise seek to know. They never come to the conclusion. And so, how can this recognition of this realization, how can this help us? How are we better off knowing about this?
So we don't waste our time?
Yeah, exactly. I kind of like sleep. I don't want to have to waste my time searching for something that I'm never going to get the answer to. That's truly vanity, right? We're talking about vanity throughout this verse. That's vain. Searching for the answer to a question we're never going to get answered.
You know, Michael, we're at a tremendous advantage. We've got this man, Solomon, who went through all of this and gives us this counsel that you just mentioned. Plus, we believe he's inspired, of course. And so he asked this question, or apparently worked on it. Why? That's what people ever ask. And yet you have this qualifying phrase in verse 12. I know it will be well for those who fear God, who fear Him over. That doesn't change anything about the futility of life, and the longness of wickedness, shortness of righteousness. Still depends this abiding confidence that, though there are some unexplained things, I still know the best way to live is to fear God. And that's even in the confines of living life under the sun. You have the book of Job, that does not have those good confines. He also asks why. Why am I suffering? And while there are innovations, he believes in the resurrection. His question was not answered either, like you pointed out. And yet Job, one of the key things, the book of Job, he maintains his integrity. His faith never reached low ebb. He still maintains his integrity and his faith in God. And so when we contemplate things like why is Bill Clinton still living and David Harvey dead, still the answer is serve God. Whether you talk about the short life or something beyond that. We have the advantage of the book of Job, a man to contemplate that aspect, but Ecclesiastes, the shorter focus. Either way you want to look at it, we don't have to spend all this time in pursuit, worry, and consternation. We can still know the best life we can fear God.
Yeah. And we know Job didn't let go of that fear of God, even with his wife was trying to encourage him to curse God and die. He still feared God. He still maintained that. So, yeah, we have Solomon's wisdom. Like I said, we know he had wisdom given to him by God. He was inspired. We know he had all the resources available to make this search complete. And he's come up with these conclusions. And, you know, we can follow them. We don't have to, we can stop dwelling on seeking to know ourselves. We can save our time. And what will we spend our time on now? We don't have to worry about this. What are we going to focus on?
Enjoying life.
Enjoying life, and of course, obeying God, keeping His commandments. But yeah, we follow God, we fear God, and the rest of the time we have to enjoy our lives, to eat, drink, and be merry. Enjoy our wives, as we'll see in chapter 9, basically make the most of the limited amount of time we have. Let's enjoy as we can.